Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
For the last while, we've been chatting to Jake Shepherd. He is the a founder and a director at A Synthesis. And we've been doing a theme and following a theme called Loser Think. And in that way, we take a category or a profession, and we look to see how we can gain from their style of thinking. This morning, we are going to be looking, Loser Think, at how to think like a psychologist. Jake Shepherd, a very good morning. How are you?
Morning, Howard. Yes, so you're 100% right. We're now on to what I would call my favorite profession, that of psychology. So while I'm not a David Abramson, I really must admit I admire how David and his colleagues think.
It's very different. It's absolutely, it's very, very interesting in, I mean, I've loved this whole series because it's really given us insight into different styles, different professions, and different disciplines, I guess, more than anything.
And if you think about it, like the role of a clinical psychologist is to try and really mitigate human suffering to whatever degree that they can. And this is like obviously very similar to other people in the medical profession. But I think the big difference is that like these, from a psychological point of view, like the issues aren't that tangible. So while you might have like a traditional doctor's got like all sorts of diagnostic equipment in his rooms, et cetera, a psychologist typically has the proverbial couch. And the reason is because in order to treat a patient, a psychologist really has to understand the uniqueness of each patient's suffering. And really, but what they need to do is they need to get to know the patient by listening to them and building a relationship with the patient. So in that respect, I would say, psychologists are really sensitive to how we see ourselves, how we see our role in the world.
Right.
It's like how we form knowledge about the world and how we understand other people, and then how we form relationships. And in that respect, I would say I think the reason we're so drawn, you and I, you know, you were mentioning earlier how you appreciate it, but I think the reason we're so drawn to psychology, I would say it's the most human of all the professions, and it's really centered around the human experience.
Before you expand that further, it's also the fact that, you know, when you look at, let's say, engineering, there might not be, obviously there's an engineer in all of us really, but not to the same extent that we all have our stuff and our thought processes and our background and our way of engaging in the world. In other words, psychology, pertains to all of us to a much greater degree.
Yeah, well, I think let's elaborate on that engineer-scientist approach. I mean, really what an engineer and scientist they're trying to remove all biases from their thinking. So like as an engineer, I don't really care if I wish, hope, and dream that the bridge remains standing. I really need to know that it's going to remain standing in the real world.
I like that, yeah.
You know, whereas you'll see a psychologist is far more interested in the personal truths, you know, how we experience reality than it is about an objective scientific engineer's truth of the world and how the world really is. And so therefore psychology is like incredibly aware of our biases and doesn't ignore them, you know, brings them into the picture. And then how do these biases shape our way of experiencing the world? And, I remember one time sitting and having breakfast with one of my cousins. He told me about the fact that he had been totally blindsided by a colleague that he thought he knew, you know. He had known the person for a year and he trusted them implicitly. And it just turned out that the person wasn't who my cousin thought they were. And they certainly didn't deserve his trust. And when he thought about it, he said, like, on reflection, there were so many warning signs over the years, but he just didn't see them or chose not to see them. And he was really, really shaken by this experience. And he couldn't believe that, like, he was such a poor judge of character. And he started doubting, like, all his relationships. Like, how can any of them actually make sense? Like, even questioning his own sanity. Maybe he didn't know anything about the world.
Wow.
And I really think what we need to admit is that, like, my cousin's not alone. I think it's a loser thing for any of us to be really confident that we're a great judge of people and of character. I think that's an inappropriate way of thinking of people. And psychologists know that really how we work with people is we use something called projection and then transference whenever we meet a new person. And the reason is quite simple, actually, because we need to be able to work with people we don't really know well. And so what we initially do is when meeting people, we make like a snap judgment and we ascribe to them like a stereotype from our history, a type of person that we've met before that we judge this person to be the most similar to. And this is called projection. You know, we don't really know the person's like that, but we make a good guess. And then we behave with this new person in a pattern that mirrors how we would interact with that stereotype person from our history. And this, what we call this transferred behavior, can often be pathological. So you can imagine, for example, a man who his mother abandoned him when he was young. So he's got this abandonment issues, and he sees all women as the great abandoner. And then he'll start treating his wife with the constant suspicion that she's going to leave him, you know. And after a few years, is it surprising that his wife leaves him? In other words, it was an inappropriate transference of behavior.
Right, he's created his reality.
Mm. So, and then in addition to that, we then suffer from confirmation bias. So we tend to only look for evidence that supports our current opinion, and then we ignore all evidence to the contrary. And this means that like our initial assumptions about that person, that like the snap judgment we made about the person, they seldom challenge those snap judgments. They like are reinforced on a constant basis. So really what a psychologist knows is that they don't really ever know their patients. You know, they'll keep notes and they'll collect anecdotes, and they'll connect them into like patterns, and then they'll generate a hypothesis, and then they'll try and test that hypothesis. So, and then they're very, very responsive to new knowledge that comes along, and they're willing to admit that they like made a mistake. And I think even more importantly, they know that we can change, that we have tremendous potential, and they know that who the person is today in the future, they could well be a different person. They could be who they were, you know? And I think what we need to then do is learn from that and view our knowledge of people and relationships really as a dynamic unfolding story with surprise twists and turns like you'd find in a investigation novel, you know? Mm. So while we might want our worlds really to be black and white, and why do we want that? Because it makes it much easier to make decisions and to understand the world. I think we need to embrace the fact that the world is really a whole bunch of shades of gray.
Sorry, now carry on.
Go for it.
No,
so I just think it's a more accurate reflection of reality. And actually, I think it makes it for a far more interesting world, just seeing everything as gray.
Yeah, so what's interesting to me is I would imagine that when people are drawn to the sciences, to the engineering side of life, it's because of this, maybe, because of this uncertainty, because people are a lot more complicated, because we're a lot more complicated, because sometimes there's a need to actually live in a tangible, clear, objective world, where either that bridge is going to endure and survive, or it's not. And these are the factors that could influence them, the bridge weakening. But when it comes to people, it's a lot more confusing. And you and I, in fact, off air, have often had the conversation that we don't even really know ourselves, never mind other people, as well as we think we do.
Spot on.
So that's spot on.
So if you don't know yourself, what hope do you have of actually knowing anybody else? And that's very right. And I think we do have this deep fear of ambiguity, and we look for certainty. So it's just to recognize that and to actually factor that in and actually become a bit more at peace with that. And then so that you can actually deal with the world at face value. And then the other thing that we have is we've got this like inborn tendency to notice what is wrong. So like what I mean by that is we don't, this inborn tendency to notice what is wrong is actually really an important trait. It's an incredibly important trait because it actually plays a hell of a big role in keeping you alive. You know, you do want to notice when things go wrong. But that basically then means that our brain is like a flaw finder, you know, by nature. And so we have like this model in our head of what we expect to happen in the world and what is normal. And then any deviation from this is then flagged for like immediate attention. So it's like almost as if we're playing this massive game of spot the difference. You know, you've got those two pictures side by side trying to see where the where the issue is. Actually, interesting. I found out a nice little easy cheat for that. When you can cross over your eyes and your left eye sees the right image, the right eye sees the left image, and you get the two to the images to come together and to align, the points of difference will then jump out at you as these like haloed blurry spots where they don't quite match up. But that's what our brain's doing all the time. It's like this spot the difference sort of game that it's playing. And I think what we need to realize is that it's a loser think to think just because you can spot the differences, and that's how our brain's wired, but that's where we have to start all of our discussions. And so one of the things that I always tell people is that when you want to have a disagreement or an argument, follow a very simple ABC formula. So like, first of all, you know, so what is the ABC formula? So first, agree. That's the A. So don't turn agreement into argument. So it's amazing how many times we dive straight into the areas of disagreement, and we then, but we don't realize there's so much we actually agree on. It turns into we're having a vehement agreement. So we really need to actually start, instead of starting at the nitpicking of the small areas of difference, start with those areas where we really agree. And then build on that. So that's your B. So address the issues that you feel have been left out by the other person, maybe overlooked, or maybe it's an edge case that the person hasn't thought through, but just like address and build. And then just compare notes, you know, and actually say, well, you know, it's not that you're wrong, but if you put the two opinions side by side, you can then compare where we differ. So instead of saying wrong, you say, listen, you know, this is the way I see it. This is the way you see it. And it's far more healthy. And I remember once having a discussion with a wonderful charismatic Catholic friend of mine. And he was trying to convert me and convince me while I was wrong. And I needed to come into the light, you know. And so in having this, you know, this discussion with him, I decided the approach I was going to use was this ABC approach. So I actually started by saying, listen, you can't believe how similar our belief systems are. You know, we have the same values. They don't call it the Judeo-Christian ethic because they're so different. You know, they really do align up. And then with this bigger perspective of how similar we are, I then went on to compare where we differ. And I remember his response to me being, you know, Jake, I disagree with you, but I like your style. And I just thought that was like quite a nice, humorous way of dealing with that. It wasn't antagonistic. It was just like, you know, that was a good discussion. And I think that really what we have is we have psychologists who've been trained to understand and be sensitive to like the typical weaknesses in human thinking. So instead of like assuming that you really understand other people, and that other people then have the ability to read your mind and like work out what's going on with you, I think start with an assumption of ignorance about other people, and that other people are ignorant about you, and then just work from there and build up from there. And I think that's a much healthier approach of trying to see the world and embrace people, different people, different perspectives.
What's interesting to me is that you're working in an environment. Synthesis is a software technology company, so a good portion of the employees and the staff are analytical, more mathematically inclined, engineering type people. How much of a role does this type of thinking play in that environment, and do you want it to?
So obviously, I would say definitely. I would say it's amazing how much we need to work with other people, and how badly our, let's call it, our dysfunctionalities get in the way of effectively working together. And it's amazing how, you know, with just a little bit of guidance, how much relationships and working, you know, working arrangements and just how well you can start working together with colleagues, becomes with just a few simple insights. And I think one of the problems and one of the challenges with very technical people is they really like working with things. So it means because they haven't really, and they don't have a deep interest in working with people, they don't really acquire the skills, and they're quite diverse and sometimes very obscure skills in terms of working with people and the way you approach things. So it's not that they don't like working with people, they just might not have the skills and haven't had the practice in working with people. And sometimes what you need to do is you actually just need to coach people you know, this is how you go about, like, you know, it's the hard skills, working with computers, working with software. Now, for a lot of these people, it's very easy. It comes naturally. But those soft skills with working people are very, very foreign. And all it really requires is actually just knowledge of how to approach other people, knowledge of yourself, some self-awareness as well. That's actually often what's missing. You're just not knowing how dysfunctional we are in many situations and how to actually address that. And when you bring that in and when you actually understand yourself a lot better and you understand why you, let's say, get heated under the collar and start losing your temper, and when you understand that, you can actually understand other people a lot better as well. And then you can actually have really, really amazing relationships going forward.
What's I think equally as important, following what you're saying, is not only just understanding yourself, but actually accepting and loving yourself for who you are. Because the minute you're comfortable with the fact that, yes, you know, I'm triggered by that, or this is such a, you know, this is a thing of mine that I find it hard to accept criticism or don't get whatever it would be, just accept that that's who you are. You can change it. It doesn't mean we're removable, because we're not, and we're different in different situations. But once we know who we are, we accept who we are, and we're actually kind about to ourselves about who we are, it becomes so much easier just to accept other people.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, allied to that is the whole concept of, you know, what does it mean to grow up? What does it mean to become somebody who steps into larger shoes, to quote from Jung? It's basically about making yourself or making your life more conscious. There's so much stuff that happens at a level of the unconscious. We don't even realize why we behave in a certain way, what stories we're telling ourselves, what's triggering us. And just becoming more conscious about all of these under the surface issues, actually that's what growing up is all about. And bringing them to the surface actually matures you, because you now have control. Oh, okay, I can behave differently in the situation because I know why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. I know what that underlying story is that was there from my childhood that, you know, causes me to act out in the way that I do. And I think that's really what growing up is all about, is just to make the unconscious conscious. And as soon as you do that, everything, you know, you have a far more mature approach to the world. You start being able to act or interact with other people in a lot more mature way, in a way that's far more functional, in a way that's far more accepting of other people and their, let's say, unconscious stories that they tell themselves, and realize it's not always about me. It's actually, a lot of it is about just this growth journey that we all on.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. And that's unfortunately where we do have to leave it. Very, very interesting conversation indeed. Gimple says, my wife is a psychologist, and I can tell you that the plumber's house has the most leaks. Gimple. Words of wisdom, no doubt. The time is 8:53. Jake Shepherd, director and founder at Synthesis Software. Thank you for always taking the time to share your wisdom with us. Have a Shabbat Shalom.